trio.
What episode are we at, Joe?
27.
Wow, 27. If we were Kurt Cobain, we'd be only around for another year.
Oh, man.
Sorry.
Janice, Jimmy, and Kurt.
That's right.
If this podcast is a member of the 27 Club, we should
this
say
is
goodbye.
It. Yeah. And I made Joe mad last week, so I almost thought he wasn't going to come back. And we could talk about that, and it's fine. It all worked out, but I mean, like, everybody's doing this on a volunteer basis, and so if any of us don't like anything, it's like, well, I don't have to put up with that, right, Joe?
I actually, I will confess, I wrote my resignation letter, and I was just about to send it, and then I did not.
Oh, sorry, really?
It's still in my drafts. I could send it now, Spike, if you like, because that's one of the things I don't like. Is I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a Puritan, but what I am is a public employee who is trusted to teach young people how to be good people, and I'm not going to sacrifice my position, and I'm not going to in any way let my students think that I'm not upholding the same standards that I'm asking them to uphold on the airwaves, be they public mm-hmm. or private. And that was one of my bones of contention from last week, is a couple of things we talked about, a couple of the songs we played, even though they were funny, I can't in good spirit say, you know, if my kids did that, I would tell them it's okay. So if that's a problem with what we're going to do here, then that's why I thought I might have to just not do it. But I want to find a way to do both. And like I said, I don't want to censor you guys. I don't want to come off the wrong way. But I do think that you guys could do your own podcast, Bob and Spike After Dark, do whatever you want. But for me personally, I am a teacher now, and I am I'm literally legally bound in some ways to do things the certain way. So that's what it was all about for me, at least.
All right, and by the way, I already wanted to apologize to you because I was a little insensitive talking about Jeff Bezos. Was that what was offensive to you? Was Jeff Bezos?
Well, that part too hits a little close to home for me because. I work with a lot of students whose parents, frankly, are very high up in Amazon, and it's like talking about it would be like I know you're into maple syrup now, Bob. So if I went on and said the maple syrup king is a dick and I don't like him, and you're sitting there making maple syrup with him every day, you wouldn't like that. So I would love to talk more about Amazon because I kind of like a lot of what they do.
You're a fan.
Yes.
You're a total fan. Now, I don't know the maple syrup analogy works because it would be if some huge company was putting every little maple sugar farm out of business and I didn't like that company.
Say there was a company who made syrup in these bottles shaped like black women. And they were putting all the little maple syrup people out of business. That would be a problem for Bob.
I think I just needed to be a little more polite about it because I do think that tech companies are inherently, the temptation is for them to be evil. And one of the people who loved the podcast is a friend of mine whose business was essentially destroyed by Amazon because when they started their business, no one had to pay sales tax, and all these other businesses that, you know, charged people sales tax and had employees and storefronts all went out of business. And it's a lot like that. What was that movie? You've Got Mail with the little bookshop around the corner that went out of business. And it's that sort of stuff.
Your lovely Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
And Tom Hanks before she had her plastic surgery and ruined her face.
But I get it. I get it. And I felt like I was insensitive to you because there you are living in billionaire land and this is your bread and butter. And then the other thing you mentioned is that some of the twisted tunes make you uncomfortable. And I disagree because they're all like against bad people doing bad things, but they're definitely probably some of them are PG-13. And even in high school, maybe they're PG-16. I don't know. So I'm going to back off on anything you don't want to do with a twisted tune. Because I don't want to lose this, Joe. I love talking to you every week. And I think you're a comedic genius. And I think you're a brilliant storyteller. And you are still dedicating your life to being in service of other people. And I honestly think that, you know, of the three of us, one guy goes into heaven right away. And then me and Spike sort of stand there and make our case at the pearly gates best we can.
Oh, you guys. No, but funny people are always welcome in heaven. God loves to laugh. I am convinced of that. So you will be fine.
So picture sure. Louis C.K. at Heaven's Gate. Ooh. Just tell me how you think that's
the devil go. Needs a few chuckles, too. Wow. So I don't know about that.
Yeah.
Well, so, it's no
anyway, big. That's my God says first is Louis, yeah. Louis the robe opening. Robe opening goes in the back, Louis. The robe opening goes in the back.
Okay.
It's no biggie.
Yes, go ahead.
And all is good. And like I said, I don't want to be the unfunny guy, but at the same time, my prime directive is to teach the next generation. Some of them are actually still even hanging around here sometime when we're doing this. So I always want do what's right. And as far as Amazon goes, if somebody told you don't pay tax, would you still pay your tax? That's what I get down to. Amazon fixed that. By the way, if you want to sell a ton of maple syrup, if you want to sell a ton of anything, sell it on Amazon. 2/3 of their business is from third-party people. So,
Amazon has done one of the most successful businesses. And by the way, you know how I don't like them? I don't like them the same way I don't like caramel swirl ice cream. If it's in front of me, I pack a huge pile of it onto my plate. So I use Amazon all the time.
That's what I was wondering.
I also, of course, hypocrite. Come on. But I live in a town where half the storefronts are vacant. I live in a town where most of the factories have moved to China. I live in a town where people are real neighbors. I'll have dinner with the people who built this house in 1988. We went out last night and we talked about the people who live all throughout the town. Everybody knows everybody. So I'm the opposite of a big city. But I also live where people can take a little criticism or give it and actually are very neighborly about it. Because like in Washington, your Trump Make America Great hats and the big, huge signs on the crane tend to be in Eastern Washington, right?
Yes, definitely.
Right.
And the city tends to be the blue, like everybody's. In other words, people cluster around the kind they like. Not here. Neighbor next to neighbor on either side. And yet they manage to, they manage to think each other as despicable and yet still respect each other. I don't know how I explain that, but it's a little weird. In Vermont, we have to actually be neighbors. Like, you can call a neighbor in the middle of the night if you're stuck in a ditch and they come again, just because they live near you, right? And when I lived in Washington, I had some neighbors that I was friendly with, but literally you get more than one or two houses away in most neighborhoods and you never, ever even meet the people, right?
It's funny you mention that because I just got a new neighbor 2 days ago and the big debate is, Do I meet them? Do I go and say hello? Do I welcome them? I got a new neighbor on my other side 2 years ago, and I went and I said hello. I said, we'll have to get together. And you know how many times we've gotten together in 2 years?
Nada.
Nada at all. And the only time we see each other is if we happen to cross paths walking in the mailbox. We're cordial. We're next-door neighbors, but I don't know them. They don't know me. That seems a little not the way it should be. And it sounds like you've got a little better system out there.
Well, maybe. But, I mean, trust me, you got advantages living in a big city with lots of employment. And, you know, I mean, Seattle is, to people from outside of Seattle, it's almost the center of the universe. It's where all the big successful tech, micro, even Google is in Seattle, Amazon, Starbucks, everything from Seattle is monstrous. Boeing is still, you know, technically considered Seattle, although they're, you know, got a bunch of hicks from Tennessee building the planes, I guess now. I don't know how that works. Maybe that had something to do with the 737 MAX.
And South Carolina is where they built that other plant, and there was a lot of talk about the work going there wasn't as good as the work going here. Of course, that talk was by the Boeing employees that work here, so... So who's to say?
But Joe's right about nothing but bad news for Boeing. They had a midsummer. They were hoping to get the thing back in the air. They've gotten certifications kind of handled. Next thing you know, there's gunk in the gas tanks. So, I mean, you want to talk about karma. You rip the heart of Boeing out and move it to Chicago to save a few bucks, and they've had nothing but trouble ever since. Shopping parts overseas, came back having to be remade, retooled. I mean, if you want it to be Boeing, you keep it up here in the Northwest. People who were born and raised on it, who care about it?
So it's always other people's fault that live somewhere different from you. I love it. I totally agree.
In keeping with the Seattle theme, I mean, but when you start shipping parts overseas to save a few bucks and the parts come back unusable, I mean, that's, you know, what were you thinking?
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
Well, the Max problem, by the way, was software. The Max was, I don't think the software was written in China. I think the software that wouldn't let the pilot take control from the autopilot, I think that's that was done in Fremont.
Yeah, it was, but it was sold as an option, not as a standard feature, an attempt to make even more money.
The airline thing,
that was dumb.
I can't believe right now that has nothing to do with how good they fly or anything, but what has seemed to become a national debate, and I don't even know how this started, but I've heard more and more people talk about the dang reclining seat than I've heard talk about the coronavirus lately. Should you be able to recline a seat on an airplane or not? I'm not sure how this national debate started, but I will weigh in with my take. If a seat is has the ability to do that and they sell you that seat, you should have a full right to do whatever that seat will do. If you don't want that seat to recline, then don't build them so they will recline.
When you recline, by the way, I think you should recline, and you should say that line from Braveheart when you're reclining. You should stick back and go, "Freedom!"
Yes. I mean, I don't. I'm courteous to people, and I don't want to be uncourteous. But if that's what the seat does, that's what the seat does. You have a right for that, I would think.
This started because a lady on her plane reclined her seat, and the guy behind her started pushing her seat like boom, boom. Boom, boom. I mean, every 2 seconds, and he did it for 5 minutes, and the flight attendant came up and gave the woman grief. Somebody filmed this and put it on social media, and it went global, and that ignited this debate on whether or not it is rude to recline your own seat. And I'm with Joe on this one. If they sold me a seat that reclines, I'm going to recline my seat. It's polite to look back to the person, make sure they're not eating. You know, and say, hey, look, I'm going to recline my seat a couple inches. It's not like you get to be a full massage chair reclining. It only goes back 2 inches at the most. Let them know you're coming. But this guy doesn't have the right to set up a home office behind me. I mean, you know, his right to set up a home office doesn't infringe upon my right to recline my seat and get. I'm already paying $400 plus for a chair that squeezes me better than any prom date ever did, just to try to get to another city. And I'll take as much as I can in the way of comfort out of those $400 I spent.
Now, from the other side,
I couldn't agree with you more, and I empathize with your prom situation. I would say this, though.
It was a tough night.
The chances of you needing a plane are declining because with the coronavirus, nobody's going to fly. So, those planes are all the planes are going to sit, right? Are you going to stop traveling by air? And are we all going to wear surgical masks? What's you guys were. You remember early on with the hype of the coronavirus, you guys were, you know, buying it. And now it looks like all of your wishes are coming true.
I was wondering where we're going to get to you being wrong about that, but that even took us halfway through the podcast for you to own up.
I wasn't actually wrong. What I said was true, but I
okay.
I will say.
No, I wasn't wrong. I Go ahead.
I will say this. Everybody who's getting ready to take a cross-country trip in the next week, raise your hand. I know we can't see each other, but my hand is in the air. I'm going to...
Mine is in my pocket, actually.
Yes. And Spike, you're going anywhere?
Oh, no.
I'm going to New York with 50 people next Thursday, and I'm not liking the news. I turn on the news today. New York City appropriates 1,200 hospital beds for coronavirus. One of the things we're going to do, thanks to one of the great parents in our community, is we're going to tour the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. Nobody likes the coronavirus less than the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. Have you checked your your stock lately?
It's a poop show.
No, I don't check when it goes down, by the way. I only check when it goes up.
Well, you haven't checked it lately then. But I got a letter from the NASDAQ Stock Exchange today. A dear guest, in response to the global outbreak of novel coronavirus, NASDAQ has activated its enhanced visitor registration policy, all locations worldwide. So I'm taking my students to the stock exchange, but first we have to make sure they haven't traveled through China. We have to check them for fever and flu-like symptoms and make sure they don't know anybody who's traveled to China. So they're starting to kind of, you know, change a lot of stuff because of this virus with travel and with everything. And at the rate this is kind of accelerating, I'm wondering a week from now what it's going to look like.
Well, so let me go back to just my take on the coronavirus, which has stayed consistent, even though it sounds like it hasn't. Look, when this thing came out, it got a ton of hype. And it's still, I believe, in hype mode in the sense that it's a cold. It's a flu. It has a high mortality rate compared to the typical colds and flu. But the flu kills, as I mentioned before, 60, 80,000 people a year. And no one freaks out about the flu. In fact, my brother won't even get his kid vaccinated. I'm like, seriously? So here's the thing with the coronavirus. And I've been doing a ton of reading. Because anytime I think I might be wrong, I do a ton of reading. And I usually find some way to rationalize and consider myself still being right. Does anybody else do that?
Not as often as you do. I see you send a lot of emails to verify that you might have been right about something. I'd
be like trying to teach Michelangelo how to paint. Yeah. Come on.
So here's the scoop. I mean, there's lots of coronaviruses out there. This one gets lots of attention because at first, when people went to the hospital, roughly 2% of them died. Granted, they were old and they had other concerns. And by the way, when my wife were talking about this earlier today, we're like, well, it's just the elderly. And then we looked at each other and went, oh, shit. We can no longer refer to that as a different group of people. And but anyway, so what they suspect now, and news is coming out every single day, is that many people have it and get no symptoms. Did you know that some percentage, like 15 or 20% of the people who have the flu never even have any symptoms? They just carry it. And what they also suspect is that a huge number of people with the coronavirus just think they have a cold and never get sick enough to be diagnosed. What that would mean, and this sort of good news, is that the mortality rate would actually go way down. It still kills people. And look, I was never telling you that, you know, it's going to be great if some people die. I've always put the disclaimer that I hate to see anything kill anybody, just be fair. But this thing, to treat it like the end of the world, it isn't that. I mean, it's going to be in a long line of history of every so often, you know, every 20 years or whatever, there's some virus that comes along that kills people. This is going to be one of the bad ones, like SARS, MERS, H1N1. But what's really amazing, the science right now, is that they've already developed a vaccine and they're just starting to test it now. And so mankind, and in this regard, I guess I have to say I was wrong, because the hype contributed to the resources to build, you know, to make the medicine, because there's money to be made in the vaccine. So when this vaccine kicks ass, then, you know, all we'll have to do now is wait for the next thing to come out. And we're getting to the point where if human beings can manufacture a vaccine in a couple of months, that's incredible.
And I do feel better about the whole thing after quickly turning on the TV today. President Trump had his coronavirus press conference, and I don't know if you saw it, but he's putting a bunch of totally brilliant people on this. That's his quote, led by the vice president. So we're on it. And I think everything's going to be fine now. I just hope.
Is he going to use the same scientists that deny climate change? Who's he putting on it?
He just very brilliant people. Now, he doesn't give them names. Actually, I'm sorry, totally brilliant people, not very. They're totally brilliant.
And, stable geniuses, I hope.
Yes, and they are on it. He reassured us today. So
he said it was a stable of geniuses, is how he put it.
It might have been.
Something like that.
But because we're close, even though I agree, I think it's probably a little overblown. I don't think it's the end of the world. But if it goes much further, they could close the borders and stuff. There's a couple of levels of pandemic. We're only a couple of pandemic levels away from really shutting this place down, and everybody shutting everything down.
Except that if we were honest with ourselves, and in the media and the news, we're almost never honest with ourselves, there is a point where you give up. You just go, and the CDC almost basically said that. You know what? It's not a question of if, it's just when. And they said 40 to 70% of Americans could eventually get it. And when that happens, it's just, okay, it's like the H1N1 flu. We all got it. What do we do? By the way, Lisa and I are going on the Moody Blues cruise with Randy Hansen April 1st through the 8th. Here's the way I look at it. If Justin Hayward is going to go on this cruise, I'll go. Right? And cruise ships, Lisa has a relative who works in the cruise industry. And we actually talked to him today. Cruise ships may be the safest place in the world to be. You know why?
Well, you're isolated from whatever else is happening. And if nobody has it, then you're good to go.
That's one possible. Hey, Spike?
All the water's bottled?
It will be. All right, let me put it this way. Their entire multi-billion-dollar empire depends on your confidence and nobody getting sick.
That story last week about the boat floating around full of hundreds and hundreds of cases, multiplying by magnitudes on a daily basis, that doesn't give any pause.
No, that was one in Asia, but that's like when a plane crashes. Every other plane did just fine. And in the meantime, they're all coming up with various things. For example, something you should always do anyway, never use a ladle at a buffet that someone else touched.
Just use your hand.
Think about it. Yeah. I mean, we do it. And by the way, when you wash your hands at a bathroom and then you go for the doorknob, just inviting the germs from the guy who didn't wash it. I mean, it's crazy. So if we go, we'll be extremely careful. And I think we are going to go, but that's April. I mean, we may be going just to get out of America at that point. I don't know. Yeah. It's going to be pretty scary.
And if Randy Hansen's on that boat, I have ultimate faith that nothing's getting that guy. I mean, he's pretty indestructible. So
no, he'll be fine.
Yeah. I think you're in good company there.
There's a lot of big famous musicians. Todd Rundgren goes on that thing. Really? Who's the guy who did Eye in the Sky?
Alan Parsons.
Alan Parsons is on the boat. Yeah. Wow. All these people, you sort of hang with them all week. And Randy and Kevin treat us really good because we're old friends, so they get me passes to, like, I'm, you know, roadies for the band, and we eat with the stars. So it's fun. I'm sure all their food will be pre-tasted by other people to see if they can say.
Some fat guy in a 75 Moody Blues t-shirt tasting all your food for you. That's perfect.
That's funny. Anyway, it's annoying. So the coronavirus, you're going to New York with all these high school kids. Are any of the parents concerned? Are they? Have any of them talked about canceling or anything?
No. We had a meeting yesterday, and I joked a little bit. I said, you know, I've always thought weather might be a factor on this trip, but I never thought a pandemic would be. I'm literally on a day-to-day pandemic watch. But no parents have said we're not, you know, we don't want our kid to go. But it's early. I mean, we're not getting on a plane till next Thursday. And the way the news cycle goes, we'll see. One thing I do know people are freaking out is hotels. The Marriott guy checked in with me today. Excited to see you. Can't wait to see you. Remember, these rooms aren't refundable because I have a family member that works for Marriott, and people are bailing big time. And fear of a virus is not a valid reason to cancel your stuff, you know. But people are trying to say it is.
No, you're not getting a refund.
Exactly. No, so that's going to be a big deal.
I have an idea for you, by the way.
Okay.
When you're in New York, take your kids to Chinatown and eat street Asian food there to prove to everybody that you're not that you're not being bigoted, because nobody do you know that business is down in Chinatowns all over America?
I think these
international district restaurants.
I think that is a great idea, because I've been looking, you know, this thing's grown. I got 40 kids and 10 parents. I can't find a place to feed 50 people in New York, but I bet in Chinatown I can. We probably go in there
and
take over a restaurant. Junior's Cheesecake does not have a place for 40 people, but Chinatown, that's a great idea. I think I'm going to take you up on that one. That's a really good idea.
You can hop on the subway and get there. And by the way, the urine-soaked guy sleeping on the subway, compared to the coronavirus, he's looking like a friendly puppy you can pet.
Yeah, he's been vetted. You know, it's funny too, and people are getting a little paranoid, because I woke up this morning with a pretty healthy head cold and sneezing, and now you sneeze, people literally jump, you know, a little bit, and they're like, they kind of keep their distance. And this is the cherry blossoms, not the coronavirus. I think it's just allergies, but people are getting very paranoid. If somebody is gone for a couple of days from work, and it's like, I think he's an Asian person too. You think it could be related? I mean, there's paranoia going on with this.
By the way, wouldn't it be if some virus came out and you could catch it from TV?
Yeah, it's the stupidity virus. We were all getting it.
Actually all catching something.
You guys watch more TV than me, and we've talked about that in the past. But last week I had spring break, and I got to confess, I was a little lazy, and I watched more TV last week that was not NFL football than I've probably watched in 5 years. And while I'm sure there's a lot of junk out there, there's also some really super educational, entertaining stuff out on TV these days. Mm. I watched the George Washington biography on the History Channel because it was the President's Day week. And I learned so much stuff about that guy that I never knew. George Washington was really a jerk. I mean, really a jerk.
He was disliked, especially in his second term. How do you know he was a jerk?
Well, going back before his second term, when he was way before he was president, he was fighting these Indian wars, you know, and the reason he was fighting them wasn't particularly because he, you know, disliked the French or the Indians. He was wanting glory, and he did some terrible leading and led it into some real massacres, and a bunch of people got killed. But then he wrote it up like, like he won. He was as a young man, he was just kind of a power-hungry jerk. Now, as he got older, I think he realized that, and he started, wanting some actual freedom and stuff.
You know, even back when the fathers of our country were around, it was the same as it is now. They just didn't call it Fox or MSNBC. The people who wrote history sort of told it the way they wanted it. So the article I read said that, you know, he was beloved except that when he became president, then they didn't like him, and he was like the most unpopular president, maybe up until the one we have now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nobody liked him after that when the rebuilding started, and that's how we got Democrats, by the way. That's when Jefferson and whoever said, you know, this Washington guy, we got to sit down and we got to be another voice here. Mm-hmm. And they started talking about that. But the thing that I really think makes him kind of a jerk is his teeth. Did you know where he got
wooden
his teeth?
Yeah.
Not wooden teeth.
No, from the cherry tree he chopped down or somewhere else?
From his slaves. He took teeth out of his slaves and made dentures because he wanted real teeth.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Gummy, bring some more food in here.
Yeah. They were property.
Yeah. Oh,
that's horrible, man.
Just like your airplane seat, Joe. If the seat goes back and you own it, it's your seat.
If God didn't want teeth to come out of their mouth, it wouldn't be so damn
just
easy
like
to pull.
Amazon.
Yeah.
If I can get away with not paying taxes, not pay taxes.
Oh, yeah.
You would have done well in Washington
style. And it wasn't uncommon. I mean, he wasn't the only guy doing this, but when you start taking a guy's teeth, you know, to say, hey, I need those.
I got to watch that special. The George Washington bio, where do I get it?
The History Channel, and it's about 8 hours long. And it is really, I mean, super well-made, super informative. At the end, you know, obviously he dies. We all know that. And that's when finally—
George Washington's not still alive?
No, but he lived a long time. And he was in pain a lot. One reason he was a jerk is because he was in pain. He had a lot of health issues at the end that started really with his teeth because,
with his teeth.
Yeah, the dental. When you have dental problems, it goes to the rest of your body. But when he died, they did free the slaves, and Martha burned everything. She didn't like, you know, these whole presidential memoirs. We know every bad thing Nixon or Trump or anybody has said. All that is records. Martha Washington burned all the letters that they'd written to each other and stuff. So there's very little of that about their relationship because she just started purging. Once he did finally die, but it was good. I would recommend it. And if you want to know more about Jeff Bezos, I recommend the PBS Frontline. 2 hours will tell you a lot of good stuff about Amazon. Very informative.
Okay, let's get some stuff that Spike has to talk about this week, because these are both very interesting scam stories. And I feel bad that you're going through this. One particular scam involves your 16-year-old daughter, and the other involves your cell phone. Let's save her for a second. Let's start with your phone. You, me, and Joe still have the same cell phone numbers we got from Sprint years and years ago, right? Did you always keep your number?
Sure did, yeah. There's a through line, and all the changes in our lives have been a continuous phone number, and that's a real commodity when you can keep your number. You don't have to reprogram everything in your world and text everybody that you know and make sure they get your new number or you lose all these connections.
Yeah.
So we all get
that was, by the way, go ahead.
Okay.
Well, that was a legislation that made that happen. That you, because companies used to hold your number hostage. So we've been through several phone companies. And lately, phone companies, I have my suspicions, because whenever there's a financial motivation for somebody, I usually follow the money. And lately, phone scams are on the rise. All of these calls saying that you've got, you know, credit and all the phishing scams and everything. But that's not what's happening to you. What's happening to you is that your number is being appropriated to spoof spam call. Find this out.
Yeah. I mean, we all get random phone calls throughout the day in our lives now, it seems. And they come with local area codes. For the most part, for me, and those are the ones I tend to pick up rather than long distance. I won't even pick up a long distance call that I don't know on my phone because I know it's a 99% chance it's a scammer of some kind or some kind of phone solicitation that I don't want any part of. Well, I get a call today on my phone from out of town, and I didn't pick it up, but I called right back to see what it would be, and it was a girl in North Carolina who said that, I just was trying to find out who this number's from, because this is the fourth time this number has called me today. This is my personal cell phone number that I've had for over, 20 years we've had these numbers?
And yeah, that's a
my
long time.
Exact, and I said, tell me the number you're talking about. And she wrote out my cell phone number. This is the fourth call I've gotten today from this number. So my personal
now
number
you know
is being
about
used
this.
To scam out people.
You do know about this, that they spoofers pick an exchange that might be familiar to somebody and they use it. But if this is someone in South Carolina, then they just like your number for some reason.
I don't know, man. Is it a random thing? Like you roll a magic eight ball and a random series of numbers pops up, and that's what the scammer goes with? Because it was disturbing to know that my number is wreaking havoc on somebody, and I worry about my own phone at that point, you know?
Well, this happened to Kelly, and what you got to start worrying is if you see something on your bill. Whoever took her number had a lot of friends in Egypt, and they called every one of them. And we got a really big, big T-Mobile bill. And Kelly said, look,
really?
I don't know anybody in Egypt. And they're like, are you sure? And he said, yes, I'm very sure. I don't know anybody in Egypt. And if I did, I didn't call them. And it took a good couple months to get that worked out. But somehow somebody had hijacked her number to call folks in Egypt. And that's what they do, Spike. So you better keep an eye on your bill the next couple months.
Yeah, it's good advice, man. It was disturbing, you know?
Yeah, watch out for that song, too. Talk like an Egyptian.
Talk to an Egyptian. That's brutal.
Yeah.
But that, you know
okay.
what? But that scam,
well,
Bob,
goofy. Now, all right.
That gives me no worries at all compared to the other scam that hit our house this week. And you mentioned it was my...
this involves Darby, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, so she's a full-on 16-year-old sophomore in high school teenager now, and she's, you know, realizing that things cost money and money's got to be earned. And so she's going through her closet, and instead of just donating things to Goodwill like we've always done around here, she's realized that there is this secondary market for clothing that's huge online. There's these apps that are on people's phones, these various trading services, TradeUp and Poshmark and Depop, or there are several, and they're reputable, you know, vendors. They're reputable sites. They're reputable, you know. PayPal is used on these sites. I have over the last few years for Christmas presents, when the daughter or the wife asks for a very specific thing that no one has in stock, and you can find it for sale, you know, slightly used on the aftermarket for clothing, and I've used this particular app on numerous occasions. It's an app called Poshmark. It's reputable. So my daughter started selling some of her clothing on this Poshmark site so she could afford to buy the new pair of shoes she wanted or the new blouse she wanted, or, you know, whatever. So
that's nice.
Yesterday,
teaching her the way the economy works now with not wasting stuff and selling it online and used things. It's sort of like we used to like rummage sales and thrift shops. Like, of course, there's a song that made an entire artist, Macklemore, in Seattle. So this is good, but what went wrong?
Well, it was disturbing yesterday when I got home and there's a FedEx envelope on our front steps, you know, and we get, you know, deliveries from, because we, as we mentioned earlier, Amazon is pretty much our guiding light and way of commerce these days. And we're always getting, you know, things delivered, because I'm with Joe. If I can find something that I want at the best price without having to get in my car and put a lot of carbon in the air and burn gasoline and run my tires down looking at 3, 4, 5 shops, I'm going to shop at Amazon. And I know there's a lot of businesses that close down because of it. It's an ugly thing, you know. But I get home and there's this envelope from FedEx, and I open, and it's addressed to my 16-year-old. And I'm like, okay, that's a little off-putting right there. You know, it's not addressed to me, not addressed to Melissa. It's addressed right to Darby. And so I get take it into her and I give it, you know, say, what is this? Did you, you know, order some kind of, is this, it feels like there's nothing in it. It's a form. I'm like, is this a something from, you know, a travel with school? Is this a permission slip for something? And she opens up, she goes, nothing in here. And there's nothing in this envelope. So I put it, and I take a look inside. I'm like, wait a minute. And I pull out, there's a piece of paper in there, and it's a cashier's check for $1,400 made out to my 16-year-old daughter.
Awesome.
I'm like,
very cool.
Well, that I had that thought, but it lasted about a half a second.
What, What like, did she do online that someone sent her that check?
There's the bigger fear, which is still haunting me in my sleep today. I said, what is going on? And she's like, well, and she says, okay, you know, and she started to sell these things, and she goes through her phone, and somebody texted her phone and said, hey, I am interested in this item for sale, you know, and the guy asked for her address. And this was, she's like, well, this was about 4 or 5 days ago, and I didn't think about it when I did it. And, you know, I didn't think it was anything wrong because I was really excited that the guy wanted to buy something. And so she gave a total stranger our home address via her phone, texting on her phone. And I'm thinking, oh, man.
Wait a minute. She gave the stranger the address for what purpose? To come to the house and look at a piece of clothing?
Well, I don't know. So that he could send payment is how it was. I looked at the text stream, and I looked at the text, and it was, you know, and it's, so she's like, blocked the number from her phone, you know, and I'm contemplating, you know, do I go to the bank and turn this thing in? Because, hey, you know, it's a bogus check. You know, it's not worth $1,400.
Well, wait a minute. So there's no commission about the $1,400? Did the scammer usually has a rap like, I'm giving you 14. I need you to, yeah.
That's where this goes. I mean, that hasn't happened. There was a text yesterday, the same day the envelope came. Did you receive the check? And she's like, I don't know what that, you know, she didn't understand when it came in, but when the envelope showed up, and then she was, oh, okay. And she started telling me what's happened and what her actions were. I'm thinking, okay. I mean, we had talked to Rob McKenney years ago on our radio show about how these scams
about
work.
This stuff. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And what people tend to do is they tend to send you a cashier's check that you're supposed to deposit, and then when things go sideways, they want you to draw money out of your account. Meanwhile, the bank ends up telling you the cashier's check is bogus, drawn on something that doesn't exist, and you're out the money you pull from your account.
Yeah.
We've got some education in this from our show that tells me how this plays out.
So, what are you going to do? You going to have some fun with the guy? I would have some fun with the guy.
The fact that he texted my 16-year-old and asked for address, the kind of fun I want to have with this guy is usually featured in Quentin Tarantino movies.
Is meet him. Absolutely. Yeah, I've got the thing for you, and I've done the check thing. And
a pair of vice grips.
Meet me at the Starbucks. Meet me at the Starbucks in South Center, and you know, I'll hand it over to you in per.
Meet me at Zed's Pawn Shop. Yeah, it's what I want. Totally what I want.
Joe, what would you do? You'd cash the check and hope for the best, wouldn't you?
Well, I got a lot of questions to fill in a few blanks. What did she sell? Did she sell this guy anything?
No.
Okay, so he just sent a random check.
Yeah.
Is there a return address on that check? Do you know where it came from?
Yeah. Yep. It's a FedEx, and it's in New York.
Okay, is there a phone number? With a FedEx, you always have to put a phone number.
You know, I haven't checked the envelope that closely. I'm sure there is.
Well, then I would call and see what the heck it is. But obviously, he's not going to send you $1,400, $1,500 out of the blue. But she must have said she's going to sell him something to have him send you a check.
You know, she said there was no specific. This was not a specific exchange for anything she had listed. He texted her, I'm interested in the item you have for sale. Weird. Yeah.
So it's a scam where there's not even a scam yet. So let's do this. Let's continue this next week, because like the time you hunted down your daughter's stolen cell phone, this is the older daughter.
Yeah.
I want to see how the fun with it, Spike. Just, you know, don't do anything risky, of course. And knowing your address, if someone's a scammer in New York, I probably wouldn't lose sleep over that, because they can't really tie you to, you know, they don't know anything about you yet. It may be an attempt to fish, but it really sounds, I'd want to learn more about what the scam is they're running. I'd wait for them to ask for something.
Right.
And usually they ask you for money somehow that the check will more than cover, which is the dumbest, oldest scam. I don't think my wife and I, even though we're starting to consider ourselves senior citizens, I don't think we'll ever be senile enough to fall for that. But that's who falls for it. You know, so maybe absolutely. We will. I don't know.
And if there's a number there,
I didn't think the coronavirus was going to be that big either.
If there's a number there, let's call them. I mean, you can call them on your cell phone. We won't have to broadcast them, but I'd like to hear your end. And I think what you do is you call and say, thank you. Hallelujah. Yes, by all means. For that kind of money, we will pray for whoever you wanted, but you didn't say who you wanted us to pray for. So thanks for the donation to our church. And who did you want these blessings to go to?
Yeah, we have 5,000 church members ready to pray for your loved one.
All right. We're about out of time, folks. I do want to say this. We're going to play a twisted tune that I think Joe's going to love this week. Ooh. It's a classic about Ozzy Osbourne that you sang, Spike, and it's really hilarious. And Ozzy, of course, is in the news. The same reason a lot of people get older and are in the news. He's ill. He's got Parkinson's. And this harkens back to when the Osbourne family did their own reality show on MTV, pioneered the real-life family reality show genre, and, you know, probably gave Kim Kardashian the idea. I don't know. Or Honey Boo Boo or whoever else made money off of Ozzy's great idea. So we're going to play that song, and Spike and I are going to come out with a podcast soon to talk about stuff, maybe get a little more risque. But really, Joe, I think you're plenty risque. I think we're going to have a fun time. We're not going to have to change anything.
Yeah, and my other issue is time. Not only am I a teacher, but a little known fact is I'm also a badminton coach, and badminton season starts next week. So some of my time is going to be a lot of my time is going to be taken hauling around kids all over playing badminton. So we will definitely make it work. Sorry. I definitely want to continue these conversations.
Right, we'll fit it in.
I have a ton of fun.
Wait a minute, you're a teacher. Shouldn't you be teaching your kids good mitten? Not bad.
That's true. You know, not anymore, but the first year I coached, on our uniforms it says, we put the bad in badminton. We are not known for our badminton prowess here on Mercer Island. The Newport and some of these Bellevue schools, really, they hand it to us every time. We do it for fun, and I keep a great fun spirit, and it's a PE credit for the kids is the reason they do it, so... We have a lot of fun.
And so I didn't get to a story this week, which I will save for next week, and that was this. I actually did something that might kill me 2 days ago. And it hasn't killed me yet, but could have up to a 40% chance of killing me. And so... Hopefully.
And we're supposed to wait till next week and hope you show up?
Next week, yeah. I'll tell you the story because it's a long story.
Great.
And it's not a fake story. It's a real story. And I'm waiting to see how it comes out. So I might, you know, if I'm not here next week, I'll just leave the story with somebody so that you'll know what happened.
Yeah. Great. Tell your wife. We'll talk to her next week, if nothing else.
She kind of... sort of knows. I will tell her more. So that's coming up. I'm making maple syrup. We'll talk about that next week as well. And as always, your feedback is super appreciated. Email us, Bob, is it bobspikeandjoe@gmail.com. Super simple. And then we have one of Joe's students who wants to drop into the show. And this is a very special student to Joe.
Hey, Sophie. Yeah. You got a sec? Come on in.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Downtown Joe, who teaches broadcasting at Mercer Island High School, is bringing one of star pupils in, Sophie, who is, she's so good at this, the future of broadcasting is what she is, that she's actually doing syndicated radio on a high school radio network.
Yeah.
Is she there yet, Joe?
She is.
I am. I'm here.
Yes. This is Sophie Prock. She's a ninth grader here. She is the one of my, well, I would say future greats, but she's great already. So.
Thank you, Joe. I'm really excited to be here. I didn't even know I would be doing this today.
Then why are you teaching her?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Why are you teaching her terrestrial radio, Joe, if she's the future? You know, you're teaching her the antiquated terrestrial radio thing. Come on.
or I'm teaching her storytelling, and it's on all formats.
That was a bad attempted humor, Sophie. That's how things crash right there. That's bad attempted humor. Oh my Lord, I apologize.
So that's what old
first
sounds
lesson.
Like. Yes.
Bob is in Vermont on a maple syrup farm. Mm-hmm. Spike is in Seattle, so it's a little, you know, learning to talk. And you did a great job of this today, by the way. Learning to talk without the visual cues is a whole new ball game. And these guys did a national broadcast using three rooms where they couldn't see each other today, and they did a better job than we're doing right now. So congratulations.
Thank you. It was really
okay.
fun.
Let's start over. Sophie, welcome to the Bob Rivers Show with Bob, Spike, and Joe. How are you?
I'm great. I'm really great. I had a nice day today.
And you're in ninth grade, right?
I am, yes. Freshman year of high school.
Do you find a high school difficult or easy?
Well, it's definitely a change from middle school, and I'm definitely more stressed out. But I do find that I have a lot more responsibility and independence than I did before.
That's good. Joe says you're like one of his best students ever. You know that.
That's very nice of him. Thank you, Joe.
Well, Sophie is very ambitious.
Really?
She is already helping me run this place, and she's just been here 1 year. She's a freshman, so I love this because what I do is, you know, it's kind of like running a college football team or something. I've got some all pros, some people that are leaving on to college that have been helping me for a few years, and you've got to replace those guys. And people like Sophie that come up and that are young people that are going to be here for a while, I get very excited about that.
Joe, did you buy her parents a house so that she would come and be at your school?
No.
No, I did not. I did not recruit.
I just want to ask you, because you're in ninth grade,
yes,
what do you think the future of audio entertainment is? Is it podcasts? Is it radio on a transmitter tower? Like, looking ahead, what is going to be the thing?
Well, I actually do listen to a lot of podcasts, and I find them very interesting, but the only time that I find myself listening to radio is when I'm in the car, when I just find myself like turning on my alarm clock. But I use Spotify as a streaming service, and I really listen to a lot of the podcasts, and I find them pretty mm-hmm. interesting. And so I think a lot of the future will be podcasts. I definitely think that.
Yes. So here's the deal. Podcasts are radio shows. They're just radio shows on demand. Just like Netflix is a TV show on demand, right? So that already is radio. Here's what I'm going to bet within the next year or two, maybe even sooner, some of these big national tech companies are going to actually launch live radio networks. In other words, they'll have shows. Morning, noon, afternoon, different formats. They'll actually once again have maybe DJs, maybe talk shows, whatever it is. There's no reason not to have live radio on the internet. Like, we're in this thing where we think live radio had to come from the top of a hill and only hit your local area or be on a network, right?
Like a stick, literally a stick on the top of our school, a terrestrial signal, yes.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to tell you where you can stick it in the future. On the internet. And people like Sophie, you are the future stars of tomorrow.
That's pretty exciting.
In 2 years, let's get back together and see if there are live radio shows on the internet.
I mean, I'm really excited for that. I think that will be a definite thing that will happen. And I mean, I myself would totally listen to that. And I think a lot of my peers would too.
So what kind of radio, like what kind of show content do you think you want to do, or are you still just exploring?
Well, I mean, I just started radio in September. I barely even knew it was like an actual thing that we did here at MIHS until September. So, I mean, I really like the news aspect of it, and I do a show with my friend Morgan during sixth period. It's kind of a little bit of trivia, a little bit of just our lives and what's going on. So mm-hmm. I don't really know yet. I'm not quite sure. Mm-hmm.
Sophie's very into news. She's going to New York because she's already nominated for 2 national awards for news. So, yes, I'd say your interest in news is a good one to keep pursuing.
Wow. So which way are you slanted, or do you try to be fair and balanced, which is another slogan for slanted? But
Well, I think I mean, I definitely try and like include a balance of everything, but Joe's right. I really do like listening to news and like recording news, and that was also what I started with here. So, I mean, it's just, it kind of came naturally to me, so I like it a lot.
And are you talking politically, okay, Bob?
And like, I like how you didn't answer my question.
I don't think it was asked in a way that a 15-year-old is going to understand. I think you're talking about a political aspect, or how do you balance your newscasts? Is that what you're asking?
Oh.
Well, like, would you say, do you like MSNBC and CNN or Fox?
Well, I mean, I kind of, what I do is I find the most like eye-catching stories and what I find that would interest the people who listen to our station. So, I mean, I find a mix of things. Like, I do use NBC and I do use like Fox, like you said, but I mean, it's kind of just a mix of everything.
Sophie, it's a pleasure to meet you. Congratulations. You have a wonderful teacher and have a wonderful career.
Thank you so much. You as well. It was nice to meet you.
Bob, Spike, and Joe. Don't fly planes. I may.
faze me. You should be scared. I'm on the road, 'cause I may be high. I may be wrong, but I'm rich and white. It may be whiskey, but it's just a pint. The breathalyzer's really out of sight. I could be sober, but I may be tight. Don't go padding your bra to please me. You never had much chest before. And don't imagine your hoot is cuter, 'cause I don't need a whole lot more. Oh, you'd probably leave me if they were bigger. Your bust would keep me from your heart. I'd miss the good times. I love the flat times. I love your breasts the way they are. I need to know that you will always wear a trainer, a cup 32. Oh, how could you think that they're not pleasing me? The way that I've been squeezing you. Oh, I don't want heaving mounds of cleavage. I never want to work that hard. I just want something that I can fondle. I love your breasts the way they are.
Show. the beat.